Welcome back to the Education Matters podcast. We've got an exciting one today. It's been an exciting week. A big group of, I think, seven folks at Capella were down in Scottsdale, Arizona at the ASU GSV EdTech Conference. It's the largest education technology conference in the United States. 2,400 people there, and it could have been more. They capped it at 2,400, and 300 plus companies presenting and kind of painting a picture of the future of education technology. And what struck me about the conference more than anything was the mainstreaming of competency-based education. I've been there for a few years in a row, and competency-based education in the last year has undergone a step change. Last year, it was kind of a conversation around the edges of the conference and something that might matter in the future. And this year, it is at the heart of a lot of what was discussed and talked about. And it was really exciting to be a part of it, and it was exciting to see the recognition that Capella got at the conference. I thought that Michael Crow, who is the president of Arizona State and the host of the conference, said it very, very articulately. He's an articulate guy. But he was talking about higher education in its current form being mastered by time and the credit hour, and that the charge of higher education in the future is to master time and not let time be an arbitrary inhibitor of students' ability to proceed in a degree program and get the competencies and be able to demonstrate the skills and theory and knowledge that they need in order to get a degree. It was a really thoughtful conversation. And so we're following that up in the podcast today with, I think, a really thoughtful conversation with Jeff Grant. Jeff is a godfather here at Capella. He's been here for about a decade, and godfather of a lot of what we do around assessment, the use of analytics that is at the heart of our competency-based infrastructure. And so we geek out a little bit. I don't know if I'm able to geek out, but Jeff geeks out, and it's a lot of fun to hear him talk about it. And even at the end of it, we get into a little bit of a conversation about fashion, which I know our more fashion-conscious listeners have been asking for. Mike, why don't you talk more about fashion? And this time, this episode, they're going to get that. And so I hope folks enjoy it. And Jeff's one of the real stars at Capella and a really cool guy. And I really appreciated him taking time to have the conversation. So enjoy. Jeff, welcome.
Hey, thanks, Mike.
Thank you for doing this. I appreciate it.
Jump into these series. They've been really fascinating to listen to.
Well, I'm glad you enjoy them, and I appreciate you making time to do this. I've been looking forward to this one. So you have a title that I'm trying to suss out the meaning of, but on your LinkedIn profile, it says you're a learning outcomes advocate.
Yeah.
What is true. A learning outcomes advocate?
Oh, that's fantastic. You know, I think a lot of time in higher ed, we're thinking about the students at the point of admission, when they come in and what their properties are and whatnot. And when I put that on my page, I had the idea that what we need is really a focus on what's on the other side of a higher education degree. And that's essential to competency-based education.
Yep.
The idea is that what's happening inside the university has a real relevance to the career success of the learner outside of the university when they graduate.
Exactly.
And their career path. So I like to think of my work as supporting that sort of longer-term vision of what's the purpose of higher ed.
Yep. So I really want to dig into that, but first, I think it's important for my many, many tens of listeners to get a sense of you personally and how you got here. So let's start at the beginning. Where are you from? Where'd you grow up? And where'd you go to school?
Yeah, family's from Springfield, Missouri. Okay. So I have the show me state mentality in my bones.
Yep.
Then family moved around a lot. My dad's in wildlife conservation. We went to Edgefield, South Carolina. So I had the privilege of going to grade school in probably the 49th state education rank wise.
Yep.
So I've seen how education can go awry. And then good fortune moved us to Minnesota. So I finished high school and went to University of Minnesota here. So I'm a Gopher, and then stuck with their graduate degree program in Ed Psych. So that's where I finished my PhD. And so what's the path from there to here? I think I've always been interested.
Wait, let's back up for a second. Because we have a lot of learners who are thinking about, who are on a doctoral journey, right?
Yep.
So you were on that journey. You're going to the University of Minnesota. What made the pursuit of Ed Psych the right thing for you? And what would you say to other people thinking about that kind of a degree?
I'll say it wasn't the degree I intended to pursue.
That is a common theme in these conversations.
Yep. What I was always fascinated in was human memory, cognitive science. And on another aspect of it, my interest was around technology. I grew up with computers, a self-taught programmer. And what I liked about EdSyc was this ability to walk in a lot of different areas simultaneously and bring an interest in psychology to practical problems of education.
Yep.
And in particular with adults. So I minored in gerontology, which is a field studying aging.
Yeah.
Because the thought is, actually, a lot of people are going to be lifelong learners.
Yep.
They're going to be acquiring new skills. The fields are changing. Technology's changing all the time. How does that new education build on your prior learning and your memories from the distant past? And what are the unique challenges there? So I kind of crafted a program focused around that topic, around metacognition, around adults using memories from their distant past in the present day. So Capella turned out to be a great fit for that. But we specialize with adult learners, many who are successful in their career and looking to pursue some advancement, some promotion, and use their skills in a new way, a new job. So it seemed really relevant to my kind of academic career interest, but also the type of work I get to do at Capella, which has been fantastic.
How did you end up here? You've been here for a while.
I have.
Coming up on 10 years?
10 years in July.
Congratulations. A decade of excellence.
Decade, oh goodness. Yeah, so serendipity, I guess I, like most things, I got started as a test and measurement specialist here and thought of it as really just a great opportunity while I was finishing my dissertation and teaching locally, a couple different colleges, to, you know, see how the other side of the education system worked. I'd been a student for a long time. I'd been an adjunct faculty for a long time. And here as an administrative type role could see, how is this experience built?
Yeah.
What's the thinking behind the courses and the curriculum and the structure? But, you know, as a test measurement specialist, I found out quickly, well, we actually didn't have a lot of tests at Capella, right? That's not our model.
Yep.
And we do have some measures, but not a lot.
That's going to be one of my questions, is why we're hiring a test measurement specialist.
Well, I asked the same thing. I think they knew, you know, at the time, this was an important area, and so it was a growth opportunity, but the educational model at Capella is different. And so it was taking the thinking of EdSyc and a specialized field called psychometrics to a different problem, which is authentic assessment. And how do we organize and articulate performance expectations, and how do we build community of faculty around measuring things that are hard to measure? And so that's really been the guts of my work at Capella, has been how to engage subject matter experts and faculty in thinking about our curriculum and competencies that are important for career success and also academic success here at the university.
Yep. So a lot of these conversations that I've had on these podcasts are around the topic of direct assessment, but it is in how we implement it, right? It's how we implement it in our FlexPath program. It's how we implement it in different degree programs, IT, business. So take folks into kind of under the hood, right?
Yeah.
The back room. What does it mean when we talk about competency-based education? What are we doing?
Well, we're definitely doing a lot of different things.
Yes.
And we have been for a long time. So maybe where to start with that is curriculum design.
Mm-hmm.
Traditionally, programs in higher ed are developed in a fairly insular way from small groups of faculty leaders working maybe with some business units, local community, to think about a new offering. Capella, we built on that tradition, but moved to an outcomes-based model. This was back when we were first accredited regionally through AQIP, year 2000, to say we're an outcomes-based institution.
And real quickly, AQIP is a program through the Higher Learning Commission, our accreditor, that we were one of the first institutions, and I think the only for-profit institution or online institution to participate in.
Exactly. Thanks. Getting me on jargon there. It's a job hazard here at Capella.
It is.
So anyway, we said we're outcomes-based, and what that then meant was that our job got harder. We had to not just think about what we were ready to offer and how it was similar to other offerings. We had to think about, what does the learner need? And what's the future going to look like for that graduating learner so that when they finish the program, they'll be ready to be successful in their career? So that involves a couple different business processes of looking around at leading futurist thinkers around professional bodies and the standards that they articulate for their own disciplines. And it involves reaching out to more people than just our own faculty. We need to work with subject matter experts in the field who have actually been successful and have a good knowledge of what the future is going to look like to base our programs on those outcomes. And so that's maybe step one is curriculum design. Capella, though, we want to make sure our learners are making good progress towards those outcomes. And that's where our competency-based model is grounded, to think about if that's the outcome, how are learners going to get there? And how do we break those outcomes down into competencies
yep.
that have meaning and value and are sequenced across a program appropriately? So learners are exposed to good instruction, good feedback, challenging assessments that make sure they're making good progress. And so my work has primarily been focused more around developing what we call a fully embedded assessment model. A fully embedded assessment model says every academic experience you have in the program should be supportive of those outcomes of the program
yes.
at the end of the program. And so
hardly a revolutionary, shocking idea, but not a very prevalent one.
Well, exactly. And so I don't think it takes a PhD to figure out that model.
Right? Yeah.
But it has taken many to execute on it. And because the demands are high, we have to think about why is it that we have our course designed the way we do? Why are these assignments in this course articulated the way they are? So the work involves working with subject matter experts, faculty, we have a role at Capella called an assessment specialist.
Yeah.
We have curriculum specialists. We have instructional designers. These are people with specialized training and skills that help us build the fully embedded assessment model. And the result of it is that we have rich data about learners' progression longitudinally
yep.
across times towards those outcomes to, one, ensure our programs are effective, but then also what we've found through our competency map tool is we visualize students' progress along the way so that they can self-correct and be aware of their success.
Let's take a detour here because I think this is really important, and it's something that you are at the heart of helping us create is the competency map. And we've gotten a lot of attention for it externally. Talk about, you mentioned kind of the purpose of the competency map, but talk about how learners can effectively use the competency map as they're going through the degree.
Okay, yeah, fantastic. Well, I think it's a helpful tool, and it can be used at several different points throughout each course. So at the beginning of a course, it's helpful to look at the competence map just to figure out what's going to happen in this course. What are the competencies that this course is going to be focused on? What are the assessments in the course that are going to measure those competencies? And what are the specific performance criteria I'll be held accountable to demonstrate those competencies? So I'd advise learners starting a new class, definitely go through the course room and look at all the attributes and assets there. But spend some time on the competency map to take a more high-level view of what am I getting out of this?
Yep.
Then what the competency map does is it shows learners their status and progress against each of those competencies as they're completing assessments in the course. So the idea is if a learner feels like they're not succeeding, they're not making progress, then the competency map will help you visually see, well, which competency are we talking about? Where's the real rub? And it's possible several assessments throughout our course have hit on a common competency that you'd really stand to benefit from focusing in on.
Mm-hmm.
So it has a metacognitive outcome in that sense of being more self-aware and then more intentional about your study and future work. And then maybe the last use case I'll talk about is print and social share.
Yeah.
You know, courses matter. It's a lot of work to finish a course. And as a student, as an adult learner, you should really leverage your social community to motivate and use those accomplishments for your own betterment. So you can print your competency map. One thought is maybe your manager would be interested in knowing more about your educational journey, and that could lead to better, more in-depth one-on-one sessions or coaching for your own career path. Could be that a hiring manager would be interested in particular competencies, and if you're going for a new job or a promotion, encourage you to print relevant competency maps, bring those. And then the other is around social share. So what you can do is post your competency map accomplishments to Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. These are increasingly important for hiring. You know, recruiters use those resources to find talent. We think about the skills gap. There are a lot of people looking, for example, for data analytic skills, and you acquire those here at Capella, does you a good service to let the world know about those accomplishments.
And if you think about LinkedIn, you know, I think that they are thinking very dynamically and creatively about these issues. But the endorsements, right, and I salute them for experimenting with that and trying it. But I think that they're, to the extent that they had value, I think they're losing some of it because the relevance is going away as anybody just endorses you for anything. I've got people who I've never met endorsing me for public speaking. You know, they don't know if I'm terrible at it or not.
But they've listened to these podcasts.
Yeah, they've listened to these podcasts, and they know that I'm a very accomplished public speaker.
Yes.
But the idea that you could take this competency map, which does provide a degree of fidelity most other programs don't have around their courses and around the competencies that make up these courses, and put that on there is kind of a next level of understanding about unpacking a degree and what it means.
Yeah, I think you're right. And what you're getting at is the variety of bits and pieces of evidence that an individual can use at different points to advance their career. And certainly social data about endorsements, that's relevant. But what's unique about Capella is we're providing our students, our learners, with faculty judgments.
Yep.
And these are people that have PhDs. They're experienced in their field. We talk about hiring scholar practitioner faculty that not just academics, but have been successful in an applied career. So that has unique value. And I think what we'll find as internet technologies advance, there'll be more and more ways to collate those data together for your own benefit, for your own career success.
Yep.
I get involved with some work around standards, a concept of having a consistent way of communicating competency data from one system to another system. And just learning a lot through the work, but the thing that I'm impressed with is this concept of linked data that is enabling places like Google and Facebook to provide recommendations to users using just the metadata that's been posted and available on the internet. And you could imagine a competency structure that would help support this real problem, which is findability. How do people that have these skills, may not have a degree yet, but have the competencies and have the social connections or have accomplished many tasks related to success in a job, how are those people found and placed so that they can leverage those competencies for their own betterment in the job that they want to have?
You started to touch on something where I want to take the conversation next. So we've talked a lot about podcasts about FlexPath, right? And in layman's terms, it turns the educational model on its head because instead of time being held constant and learning being variable, which is what the traditional model of credit hour is, we're holding learning constant. And the time is variable. And I think that's a really profound idea. But in order to be able to do that, and in order to be credible in doing that, you have to be able to assess the learning at a very high level. Talk a little bit about how Capella uses assessments to validate learning.
Yeah, that's really been, I think, the heart of our FlexPath application, and but also all of our credit-based courses. And it builds on this fully embedded assessment model that I talked about, but another way to think about it is the importance of an authentic assessment. So some of our competitors or peers in competency-based education have depended more highly on checks of knowledge. You know, just can you answer these items correctly? Can you recognize the correct answer when presented to you? With competency ed, I think we need to go beyond that. We need to think about, can the learner perform when given an authentic task in a simulated environment in which this competency is really important to have?
Yep.
So that's been the work of our instructional designers and subject matter experts to build authentic assessments in every course that we offer. And not just one, it's not just one final assessment, but there are multiple assessments staggered throughout each course that build on one another and that are challenging the learner to demonstrate the competency. So I think the design is the key piece. The other difference in our model, it's important for it, is using a criterion referenced assessment as opposed to, you know, grading on a curve or norm referenced models where it's really just, you know, you did better than your peer. Well, that's not helpful for a hiring manager.
Yep.
They want to know, can I perform to the expectation?
It's not helpful for an adult who wants to be practicing at the top of their profession.
Absolutely. It's efficient. I mean, it's simple to calculate an average and look at the distribution. Mm-hmm. And so for instructors, I can see why it's appealing. But for students and really for the purpose of higher ed, it's a better approach to specify what the expectations are and then make those clear to the learner and then base the assessments on those expectations. You know, moving forward, I think what we'll find is increasing confirmation and data from the external world that can help us validate and adjust our assessments and our curriculum. Some of our degree programs are structured for licensing in particular fields, and the rates of being licensed in that field are very helpful for confirming the soundness of our curriculum. I think another emerging area has been career success, career outcomes.
Yep.
And we've done a number of research studies to go out to our alumni, but also our alumni's managers, and work with them to find out, has this curriculum been successful? Can we tie that back off with the assessment data we have in-house to say that, yes, we're delivering on the competencies like we thought we were?
One of the things it's really important for Capella to be good at is to understand what's going on externally, both in the end markets that employ our graduates, but then in the world of higher education. And you're one of the most externally focused people at Capella. You're paying attention to that stuff all the time. Anybody who's interested in this stuff should be following Jeff on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle?
Just Jeff Grant.
Jeff Grant. It's that simple, folks.
I was there first.
In the last year, over 2014, early part of 2015, competency-based education, I think, underwent a step change in terms of public awareness, right? It is now a terminology that, if it's not well understood, is at least often heard. Mm-hmm. Where do you think all this is headed? A year from now, 2 years from now, 5 years from now, where will competency-based education be?
It's exciting to think about, because I think there's a lot of developments going on now that hold promise for having even more value of a competency-based model. One thing that's surprising to me is a common refrain in external publications is about the disparity of models and how different one institution is from another. And I think that stems from just sometimes using different language for very similar or very common tasks that any competency-based model shares around focusing on particular relevant curricular goals, measuring those with criteria, and having some verification of that assessment data. And so as that becomes more realized, that really the language, although different, the processes and the operations are very common, it enables standards to be articulated and for the data that are generated as a byproduct of competency programs to have even more value for the student. You know, one outlet, it just seems like, is that we could help close the value or make more explicit the value chain between higher education and career success.
Yes.
And that has been an important relationship, but implicit. And data from competency-based education and data documented and communicated through, for example, an initiative like Open Badges. Open Badges is a real exciting initiative.
Yep.
Although, again, maybe the language differs across lots of different institutions, the concepts are very core and similar. And you could see where having machine-readable accomplishments and records of competency demonstrations provides a tremendous amount of value for the learner and for them to control and pursue their own career goals as they wish. W3C is an internet body group, and again, that group has a credentials working group that's working parallel to build on the open badges and build infrastructure to help these data connect one another. Anyway, what's the future? It's very exciting.
That's exciting.
It's very different than our somewhat broken higher ed employer relationship now.
I think fragmented. So I think Capella does a very good job today of both articulating the competencies that our learners have in a way that is valuable to employers. We do a good job of talking to employers about the competencies that they need, but I think that there's so much room to grow there. Picking up on what you're saying, I think that's going to be integral to the next generation of competency-based education. You're one of the people who represents Capella most frequently externally. You just got back from a Learning Analytics conference. Talk about that and talk about how you and Capella are received when you're talking about what we're doing.
Yeah, it's a pleasure and honor to do that work. And I think I've noticed a change over the years. There's been a lot of, just no recognition, no awareness of what the work is that we're doing around competency-based education in particular. And that's changed a lot now. It's not just those people that are already doing competency-based education that are coming to those presentations and asking questions, you know, looking to advance their own special interests. It's broader than that. There are people that have been thinking about higher ed at many different levels and recognizing some important attribute of competency-based education as being key. So there's still a lot of learning going on mm-hmm. in those presentations, but from a broader audience than it has been in the past. And that's exciting to see. It feels like there could be some momentum growing, and you start to wonder, I think there was a recent conference where the point was made, if higher education is not about competencies, what's it about?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
I think that's a profound point, that maybe there could be a core of competency-based education that any institution is actually already participating in, even if it's not called that explicitly, but would benefit from the infrastructure and the technologies that are being matured to support CBE programs.
Yep. So now we're going to shift. We're going to end on the sartorial part of the podcast. Capella has like a reverse clothing discrimination where, and this is, I'm sorry for my listeners, very internally focused, but Jeff and I have to talk about this. I like to wear suits and ties, and most people at Capella don't. They don't like to wear suits and ties. You wear a tie every day, and I appreciate that. Tell me why you are always dressed up for work.
Goodness, so why the tie? You know, so there's many different stories about this I've told over the years. So the one I'll tell you today is that it turns out to be just a really pragmatic choice, because I'm somewhat befuddled by fashion. Uh-huh. And wearing a tie, you'll never be critiqued for being poorly dressed, right?
Okay.
So it's simple for me.
Yes.
And others feel like it's dressing up. For me, I feel like I've just made an easy choice.
Yep.
So fits with my pragmatic
On behalf of persona. The oppressed, professionally dressed minority here at Capella, I salute you and your choices, and I thank you for taking the time to visit, and I'd love to do this again and just stay on top of what's going on in this really exciting space.
Fantastic. Thanks for the time.
Thanks, buddy.
Appreciate it.